Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 393rd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by our wonderful patrons, Ryan Valdez, Jennifer Liao, Sarah Demestri, and Sourabh Chakraborty. Thank you so much to all our new patrons. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. Today, it's a Matt and Oren catch-up episode. We've got a lot to talk about. But before we talk about that, we have an important announcement to make. We've seen literally hundreds of you sign up for our upcoming live event. Take it away, Oren.
I have to do this? No, I'm just kidding. Of course I have to do this. Yeah, so hundreds. Can you say if it's like 1.200, that's hundreds?
I guess maybe 200 would be.
Over one?
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a lot of people have signed up for this event on October 18th. And unfortunately, very, very, very unfortunately, and depressingly, it is no longer going to be on October 18th. But the good news is we're moving it potentially to the following week. We are going to know tomorrow what our new date is going to be. The truth is I got a job in Atlanta and I have to be in Atlanta all of next week. And it's such a bummer because I can't tell everyone how excited I was about this live show. We haven't done it forever. And I like literally was considering not doing the job. But, you know, it's a good job. It's a commercial. I unfortunately couldn't not take the job. And when I told Matt that, he was like, yeah, man, that's the show. What I think you meant by that is like, is hopefully like part of our appeal is that we're two working directors and not just like podcasters that like are criticizing directing or pontificating about directing.
Like, that's the nature of being a working director. And I think part of what we try to do, the reason we talk about ourselves, besides being egomaniacs, is also to illustrate what the lifestyle is like. And if we haven't made it clear at this point, it makes it pretty hard to make plans. And so, unfortunately, most of the time we're talking about seeing our families in some meaningful way. And in this case, it's seeing our podcasting family. Do not worry. We are going to have the same theme, the same topic. We're going to dig in on it. It just will be likely about a week later. We will firm it up by the time you're listening.
Yeah, it's still going to be Black Magic is going to give away free stuff. We have a pizza sponsor. There's going to be free food and drinks. We're still going to do it at the Sawhorse Party House. And our panel, which was a really awesome panel, we have yet to confirm with them that they are available for our new date because we don't know our new date yet because I'm waiting till tomorrow to find out if I have to go out of town again for another job. And I can't think of anything worse than a double postponement. So
yeah, it's a bad luck. It's a bad luck. But congrats, Oren. It's great that you are busy that you'll have lots of great insight and stories to bring back from those shoots. So it's really kind of a little win.
Yeah, just a little business before we move on to our next topic. We're going to send everyone that has a ticket now all the details about the new show. If you joined our Patreon because you wanted to get a ticket, you wanted to ensure that you get a ticket, and now you can no longer go to the new date, then let us know. We're happy to refund you for joining just to get a ticket. And that's it. You can always email us, always tell us your thoughts and everything, not just related to the live show, but anything you ever want to talk to us. Matt and I directly read the emails, justshootitpod@gmail.com. We try to get back to as many as we can, but we do get a lot of like interview requests and we can't we can't even schedule our own live show. So sometimes it's really hard for us to just schedule everyone that emails us. So know that we're still rooting for you, getting your emails, listening to you, and we do our best to respond to them when we can. But we appreciate you all, and we can't wait to see whoever can make it to the live show. And so stay tuned for that, and we'll obviously post things on our Instagram and stuff to keep you updated. And one more thing I wanted to touch on before we get into some filmmaking topics. A lot of listeners of our show know that I'm Israeli and that I grew up in Israel. My dad lives in Israel, and a lot of people today, Tony Gapastioni, just a few minutes ago, reached out and just checked in because, you know, there's been some a lot of crazy stuff going on there. It's kind of a scary time. And a lot of lives have been lost. My dad is doing okay now, just, you know, waiting to see what happens next. But I have a lot of family there. And so, you know, I've kind of always been, I try not to be too political and stuff, and try not to even like go on social media and post my opinion, because I just feel like it's so noisy and everyone is doing, every celebrity is saying every, and it's like, I don't feel like I'm adding to the discussion in any positive way, aside from just saying like, yeah, me too. But when I was talking to my dad yesterday, he told me how much like they appreciate just hearing people, you know, like there was a pretty amazing speech by Biden yesterday, at least in the eyes of like Israeli people, and like that it is appreciated, you know? So to everyone that's reached out to me and just checked in, thank you. That was very nice of you. And know that it's appreciated. And I'm hoping things get better in the, you know, not too far future. Anyhow, on that note, let's talk about some storyboards you drew.
Listeners will know I'm kind of in light prep on my upcoming feature, waiting for this SAG strike to officially wrap up before we go out with a handful of offers. It's very exciting times. And
let me ask you, can you and I feel like I might ask you this before, and I apologize, mm-hmm. and I'm rehashing it, but because of the strike, you can't even make an offer?
Basically, no one is going to, and when I say no one, I mean no agents, basically, are going to read or send along your materials, your offers, unless you have an interim agreement.
Oh, right.
And the interim agreement is like, if you've applied to be a SAG signatory and you've signed this agreement that says that whatever the deal is at the end of the strike is one that you're agreeing to, then you can move forward, basically. And so that's how certain productions have managed to stay in production, independent films, basically, and why certain celebrities are allowed to attend different film festivals and things like that.
And to our listeners, by the way, this episode comes out tomorrow. If the strike is already over by the time you're listening to this, I'm sorry.
Yeah, totally.
Sorry you're listening to this. But do you get that agreement?
So you sign up to be a signatory, and then simultaneously they send you a link that says like, hey, if you want to sign up for the interim agreement, even though you don't have your SAG production number, which is oftentimes the keystone to unlocking all of the things you need to unlock and prove that you're a real production, it takes 10 minutes to fill out a form, basically. The catch is that for the last, you know, 80 days, everyone's been trying to get these interim agreements.
There's like a backlog.
There's a backlog. And so the priority has been films that were about to go into production, essentially. Rightfully so. Like, if you're like, hey,
we have locations, we have everything.
Let's do this. Put those people to the front of the list. And then there's also a lot of films out there that are completed that, for instance, wanted to tour in film festivals and things like that. They need an interim agreement in order for their actors to be able to promote their film in any way. And that's from being on a red carpet all the way to like an Instagram post, honestly, depending on how strict people are about, you know, adhering to the rules of the strike. Certainly there are some actors who, you know, are like, yeah, it's a selfie, no big deal, but like the letter of the law is you shouldn't be promoting it in any way. So then those people need, those are front burners as well. We are in pre-production, and so it's moving pretty slowly. And literally we got an email that was kind of like, hey, you know, hit us back if you don't hear anything by this date. And it was like a long ways into the future. And it feels like, this could be me reading into it, but it feels like the subtext is kind of like, we all know it's probably going to be over by then, so don't worry about it. You know,
This was an agent or the SAG
automated email. So that's probably, that's really me putting words into their mouth. I'm being, you know, cheeky, but yeah, likely by the time we would have gotten our interim agreement, everything, the dust will have settled already. But even though it's early days, reaching out to talent, at least if you go through the traditional methods, you're reaching out to their agent, even if you've got a good relationship with them, they're kind of not reading right now, unless that agreement is in place. Not kind of, they're officially saying they're not reading. So look, if you run into, you know, your old friend from high school who's now a big TV star at a party, you know, maybe you slip them something on the side. That's not our situation right now. And so we're just kind of locked and loaded with the people that we want to go out to and all of that stuff for as soon as this strike is finally over. So all of that being said, I'm doing kind of the other things that we talked about in the last episode of like previs and that sort of stuff. And I started doing two things kind of more for my own process than anything, because everything's going to change a bunch, but who knows. One is storyboarding, shot listing, kind of putting those materials together more so that it helps pre-production. I can get a sense of like, how many shots do I think this is going to be in an ideal world? How much time should we allocate to this? Can I do this in a one, or all of that stuff? Because it's still going to be an indie movie that's got, you know, the schedule is always going to be an issue. So like the more I can prepare the VFX and like put the resources where things are going to be trickier, the better, right? And so it just kind of forces me to put everything on paper. And then the other thing is that, again, from a process perspective, but also from a marketing perspective, our old pal Jim Cummings has always recommended doing an audio play of his screenplays, because he knows that people don't read. And so you send them a file or a link or whatever, and they can listen on their drive. And like, if you do a nice job, it can be a really handy tool for people basically who are maybe the reading list is too long, but like they want to get a sense of the script.
Wait, are you putting the scene descriptions in the audio play?
Yes. So that's a perfect segue. So there's a handful of different things that one could do. Jim just pulls out a Zoom recorder and just kind of reads everything and does all the voices. And maybe he layers in a little bit of audio, like some sound effects here and there. I had started doing this on a previous draft and listened to it and was like, oh, this is pretty good. This is fun, actually. I get how this could be really helpful. I had layered in sound. I had layered in like ambience and, you know, thrown a few very light effects on my voice just so you can maybe tell the difference between the characters a little bit better.
Used all of my unpaid endorsements for weird sound plugins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know, mostly just essential dialogue editing, but like, you know, who knows? I might get a little fancier. But I had the thought, I was like, oh, since I started doing this, now AI is out there. There are a lot of different companies that could immediately read the screenplay and in some cases even like detect which character is which and assign them different AI voices.
That used to be like a feature in Final Draft, didn't it? Wasn't it? Oh, like maybe. You could assign different voices and you can have it read it to you, but it was like horrible.
There is, I guess Word has that as well. There, like, it's built into Word.
But Microsoft Word?
Mm-hmm.
Word.
There are a handful of different companies out there doing it. And Oren, I don't know that it's ready for prime time.
So you did it? Did you use like 11 Labs or one of those companies?
I don't want to besmirch any of these companies because I think they're trying to do something kind of cool, and especially when they're trying to cater to filmmakers, and you just maybe you're not in a community where you have access to a bunch of actors. Maybe this is something viable. I don't think it's meant to replace things. They're probably they wish it could replace things, so who knows. But having the one-to-one comparison of the first few scenes of the previous draft to what, purely from a performance perspective, to what an AI does, it just feels really, really far away. So it made me value actors. And also, I was like, well, this is going to just take me a couple days to do. It's going to take a while.
So you're going to cast all the actors?
I'm just going to do the voices myself, actually.
That's what Jim Cummings does.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Originally, I was thinking that I'd get people to come out and do this and that. But it's like a nice way to force yourself to just refamiliarize yourself with the characters. And, you know, if no one ever hears it, it's not the end of the world to me. But it was just like, oh, this is a nice backing track. I can start laying in storyboards and do animatics for the more complicated sequences.
So you're doing this like in Adobe Premiere or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And like, it was therapeutic to kind of come full circle. Like I said, I started off having done it that way and then was like, okay, well, let me explore some tools. You know, you get into some Reddit threads and things like that. And I, you know, it's nice to have the control and to do it the old fashioned way. But I'm curious, Oren, are there tools that I'm overlooking for the audio play version of my prep that come to mind to you?
So there's this company, 11labs.io. I don't know if you messed with them or not. They generate voices. I don't know that you would feed a script into it, but you could basically write one line at a time, you know, and it has all these preloaded voices. And I think you can also train it with other voices. And from what I've seen from their demos, I've used them for like temp VO and stuff on jobs. And I literally had to say to the editor, like, whose voice is that? And they're like, oh, it's an AI. Like, there's something like, if you know it's AI generated, you might feel like there's a cadence to it that's like a little too consistent, but it's pretty good. And you can adjust, you can kind of direct it a little bit, I think, too. And it's obviously only getting better every day.
If I had done the version where I had my friends come and everyone played a different role, and I realized, oh, I need to add a character or something like that. If it was kind of like a very bite-sized performance and it would be a lot of work to have someone come back, I think I would consider that. But when you listen to this film is essentially four lead characters and then the voice of the narrator, scene description, it just feels too robotic. You know, yeah. And also it's a comedy, right? It's a horror comedy. So like the two most tricky things about either of those genres is the performance, is the tone. And so the point of this practice is, besides my process, is illustrating to an investor who maybe isn't as practiced in reading a screenplay to glean a little bit more of the scares and comedy from the written word. And so it just makes more sense for a performer who has an understanding of the nuances to glean, you know, to add a little bit extra to it. So though, you know, does 11 Labs also do music, customized music generation, or is that a different company?
I think that might be a different company. They're mainly AI voice, and they're like the ones that can like learn your voice and then say, translate it to a different language.
Oh, that's interesting. I think most of those companies can do that now. You know,
like the idea is like, hey, you make your movie for Netflix and now it's available in every language natively.
Yeah.
Without having to dub it. Yeah. No, well, that's cool. I'm curious to see. Like, it seems to me super useful just for starters as like a way to test your own screenplay, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think in doing it all yourself, you put yourself in those performers' shoes, right? So you're thinking through the character from that lens and like, you know.
You're probably also just thinking sound-wise, right? Like, oh, now a door creaks, now a footstep, now this, now the, and like, you know, I'm doing the scripted podcast. And so for us, it's like, we have all these scenes that take place in a school back to back. And I was like, I do not want to have a freaking bell ringing between every scene. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, what are the sounds that tell you, okay, now we're in the next class.
You're shuffling chair rooms, locker doors, all of that stuff.
Backpack, and Julie, my co-writer and me, we are always, I don't know if I told you about this, but I had written a slug line like interior bedroom night or something. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote, you know, the sounds of like a suburban neighborhood or an urban neighborhood. And she's like, don't write anything we can't hear. And I was like, we can hear that. She's like, what? Yeah. We can't hear that. I was like, yeah, we can. And she's like, what does that sound like? I'm like cars driving, like a car mm-hmm. parking, like a door slamming, like people, this girl lives in an apartment complex, like people chatting outside, like dogs barking. She's like, well then write dog barks. I'm like that. And it's funny because, you know, I come from an editing background, so I know what the sound effects are called, right? So if mm-hmm. you put like urban night atmosphere, night sounds very different than day. You know, in day mm-hmm. you have birds and lawnmowers, night you have dogs and like mm-hmm. maybe sirens, like they're, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you're hinting at urban density as well, right? Like yeah, how, yeah. how, like, or even how the sound bounces off of the other surfaces. What surfaces are there? Like all of those things.
Right.
Yeah. And come together.
And my writing partner's head, she's like, well, the window's closed because she has to open it later. So there's no sound. I'm like, have you been in like a super low rent apartment in the middle mm-hmm. of the city? Like there's sound. I've been in hotels in New York where it's so loud. It's just funny because I think a lot of times writers have mm-hmm. a different idea of the sounds of the world than editors who mm-hmm. are literally putting those sounds into the world.
Have you thought about, because I know you did table reads. Have you thought about doing this exercise for scenes that you're worried maybe aren't working, or even again, just to kind of like, sometimes it's easier to test it out just by like, right. you know, well, ripping some soundscapes from YouTube, like ambience in particular, like there's a wealth of awesome ambient sounds on YouTube. I guess there's like a whole subgenre of people who just want to listen to like neighborhoods or like,
yeah. I love neighborhoods. East 7th
like,
Ave.
Like oh, a little, that one? A little white noise for sure, man. You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I have a ton of ambience. It's not the access to sound that's an issue. It's sure. the work. But
sure.
I think yeah. because we're at, you know, we're already like in it and it's already like a real mm-hmm. show. Like I don't, and we're being paid for the scripts. Like, I guess I'm kind of putting that on the side sure. of production.
Yeah,
And trying to just get through the script because we get a lot of notes.
Sure.
And it's like, we got this note. It wasn't even from, it was like from our partner that was like, hey, you have all these different teachers. Just make it one teacher. Sure. Every teacher at the entire school is the same. Like the principal, the hall monitor, the lunch lady, the English teacher, the bio teacher.
Is that a budget thing or is that a
clarity thing. Kind of thought it was more of like almost like Charlie Brown style, like you're trying to build this world where there's teachers, but like mm-hmm. who the teachers are, isn't that important. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's like, well, this teacher wouldn't know this. Like the principal is making an announcement that this principal is interrupting the teacher's class. So it's like, mm-hmm. so we basically got it down to two. Now we have a principal that kind of mm-hmm. gives us like admin sure. overall big sure. picture school info. And we only have one teacher, the biology teacher, because that's the class mm-hmm. that something happens in there that sets off everything else. And then the rest of school, we've kind of just like rewritten it where the other classes are just, we're more like in the hallways with the characters.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. You know, when I did Squaresville, I made it very explicitly an adult-free world. I think there's only one or two adults in the whole show and none of them have any answers. Like I really wanted it to be something right. where these kids are on their own and there's not a person to turn to who has a magic wand the way I think, especially at the time, YA was like, there were sage parents like weighing in to be like, right. when I was your age, you do this or that.
Yeah, mentor.
And that was a very explicit decision that I think I really am proud of. It's maybe,
no, that is a cool, it's, I like
it was,
that idea.
It was nice. But so maybe there's something there, but also I think the other thing you are trying to do in texturing in all of these other voices is give it scope. You know, like what do you do when you're doing a podcast and all you have is audio? It's like, okay, let's make sure this world feels real. So does it matter like the backstory of the hall monitor? Not really, but a different, an unrecognizable adult voice with a little reverb in an echoey environment, right, being like, all right, everybody to class, let's go.
Or antagonizing. Yeah, right. Like we had the hall monitor basically takes her, she's trying to talk to her friend to tell her why she's in trouble, and the hall monitor's like, you know, you're not allowed to be on your phone here, and she just takes her phone away, and it's like, we're trying to make things hard for our character, and these adult teacher type characters are kind of like antagonists to her. But we also, we had basically, it's the first day of school, she sees this guy at lunch, we find out who he is, and then he, it turns out to be her lab, assigned lab partner in the science class. But it's weird that the first thing you do when you go to school on the first day of school is go to lunch, you know? So we had a class just kind of like, and it was a little bit more to build out the town and the scout and the kids and her relationship to the school. And so we changed it out to just be the principal, like just, you know, asking her about her summer as she's walking in, and she's like, do you hang out with all your friends? And she's like, nah, like basically we're creating this character that has like no friends, you know? And then she starts telling her the principal, you know, like, I kind of helped out at my dad's shop. And the principal, like, it's like, great, can you get to class, please? You know?
Sure.
Like, kind of just establish that she's, like, a little bit all alone. And then we go to lunch. But again, with visuals and a visual medium like Squaresville, you could cut to an exterior shot of the school, exterior shot of the house. Here, it's just sound. So it's, like, bell ringing, students talking, shuffling, chairs scraping, lockers closing, backpack zipping. So it's an interesting challenge. But anyway, your audio play, I'm really curious to see. I'm also curious to see how long it is, like relative to this, you know, the edit time of like what your screenplay is. But you mentioned that you're putting boards in too. Is that, where are those from?
Yeah. So, great question. I'm old school. I like to print things out. And, so I've got my current draft that I'm kind of just noting, and like I have some, you know, board templates and all of that, and I've been drawing thumbnails here and there or just kind of doing shot lists. And then I was reminded of Storyboarder, I believe. Yeah, Storyboarder, which is software that allows you to draw storyboards, you know, in app, basically, whether that's on a tablet or with just a mouse, but also has pre-rigged 3D.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Maquettes, models, basically, that you, they have a whole bunch of different poses and things like that. I think you can even import stuff from other from other sources. Like, I think if, as long as it's an OBJ or whatever. So I'm imagining you could build a metahuman or something like that and bring it in there. That's quite powerful, that like lets you do animatics as well. And I got pretty excited about it. Have you ever used something like that?
Yeah, I've messed around with them. I just find It's like every tool that gives you something takes something else away, you know? It gives you some ability to actually use a camera to place it, but takes away the variety of humans you have, you know? And if you have three people in a scene, now two of them look the same or just totally wrong, or now you have a kid playing an adult because... So it's, you know, obviously I'd use Blender to kind of mock things up in that I have like a huge... access to a huge library of elements, and even there... Sometimes I feel like I'm spending so much time setting up the scene.
Building the scene.
Where really, it's just like, it's an all-American living room, and someone's watching TV, you know? And why did I spend 7 hours building the scene to get find these three shots that I could have just sketched, you know?
Right. Yeah. And so that's kind of where I'm at now. It's like, this tool is very cool and very powerful and is user-friendly in a way that heavier duty 3D isn't, right? Like... Unreal Engine or Blender or something like that. Those are real robust tools. And so this is streamlined just to what I need it to be. But there still is a bit of a learning curve. And there still is a significant time sink if you want to model everybody so that all your characters look great and consistent. And, you know, all of those environments, it's the same sort of thing where it's like, yeah, it's handy to... you know, map things out, but like if it's two generic characters in a blank background and I'm showing you two shots and over the shoulders and things like that, then I might as well just draw it, right?
Yeah.
So all of this is like a process in reminding myself like what my process is and what's the most fruitful for me. And I anticipate that the jump from stick figure storyboards to photoshopped photo boards is probably what will happen. You know, that when I'm on set or we're on a scout, I'll take a bunch of photos and or do videos and then kind of like rough everything in that way. You don't have the ability to pick lenses or to see the way the environment changes in it with a virtual camera. So who knows? But it, like I said, I got excited and then I was like, man, this is going to be so much work when I could really just draw it real fast. You know, what's interesting is that there are tools like Studio Binder, who I think maybe back when they were Rapbook sponsored us. I think they might have been our very first sponsor 4 score ago. They have some pretty interesting tools that let you translate those storyboards into a shot list, into a schedule. So it's a whole ecosystem. I guess I just have been in that realm of like old school, like crack open Movie Magic and do it that way. And I'm not against that. I love Movie Magic and like that's probably what we'll end up using. But in this early phase, the opportunity to reassess why am I doing that this way? Just kind of bubbled up.
Yeah.
As a tangent, Oren, that I think you're going to like.
Probably not.
Are you familiar with the film The Creator in theaters now?
Yeah. DP'd by two guys I kind of know.
Oh, really?
Very kind of. Greg Fraser, one of the DPs. He shot the Batman and Dune. I worked with him on a Mike Mills spot.
Excellent.
And then Oren Sofer has the same first name as me, same last name as my mom. He was the other DP. And yeah, famously, they shot on Sony FX3s. You know, Gareth Edwards set up these, tried to find the closest locations possible, set up these elaborate sequenced, choreographed scenes. And then they just kind of shot them with just whatever cool shots they found.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a great Cliff's Notes version. Consumer grade cameras. They can go to Best Guy.
I'd say prosumer at
prosumer. Worst. Sure. Okay, prosumer.
Like they shoot TV shows with these things, too.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But it's a $90 million film, so you would expect... Yeah.
Which looks like a $200 million movie, right?
Yeah, and Gareth Edwards is, you know, he's like a young Oren Kaplan. He does. He comes from a VFX background.
And so I went back down the rabbit hole of trying to remind myself about... his workflow, because I heard him on The Business, one of my favorite podcasts, and he was talking about how he shot his film Monsters, effectively just like on location, semi-improvised, natural light, just kind of running and gunning, kind of doc style, and then layering in all of these VFX afterwards. And it just kind of reminded me that, like, that style filmmaking is something that we sort of came up in. We were in the wake of that mentality, you know, like you can do your own VFX, you can own your own camera. I wasn't thinking so much about natural lighting, but I should have been, you know, and certainly Squaresville, my first web series, you know, I had a 1-ton grip package and 3 lights. Yeah.
Can't believe you lifted it by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm every weekend. But so I don't know. I think asking yourself the questions of like, well, this, I know why we do production in commercials the way we do it. Right. And it's all in service of making sure that all of the different stakeholders have everything they need to get this to be perfect for the purposes of a commercial. And if that's not the case, if you're making a film where you are the stakeholder, where you're making all the final decisions, and you don't need all of this support to make sure everyone's pampered and fed well and all of that, then what are you left with? And what's really the most important? And that's, I've just been thinking about it a lot lately, and trying to question the assumptions that I have about filmmaking over the years.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, obviously there's so many amazing, like single, like one person band creators, film creators. I think you sent me a YouTube channel today. I don't know if that was your unpaid endorsement or what, but of someone that made this incredible video seemingly by himself. These like video essays and kind of journals and things. I saw, you know, Valentina V, right?
Sure.
She on Twitter, she had posted, or on X, she had posted this thing that I thought was kind of interesting. She went to like a workshop for agents, you know, cinematography agents. And she said that the agent there told everyone that if you have credits that say DP and director in the same movie, that looks bad, basically. Like if you want to be a DP that has an agent that gets work, you sure you can direct things, but your DP credits should just be DP. And she was kind of lamenting the like, oh, so I guess it's bad if you know how to do everything, if you directed and shot something, if you, and she'd kind of listed some famous director DPs like Barry Sonnenfeld and you know, Gareth Edwards, obviously
James Cameron
shot Monster. And I was kind of in the conversation a little bit like Reed Morano, you know, there's these, I was like, I'm pretty sure they're either director or DP. They're not usually like both. And then, you know, a bunch of people like pointed out where I was wrong about that. but you know, it's just kind of like a different level of filmmaking. There's like kind of the people that are just doing it all and it's awesome. And they're, a lot of them, their films go to Sundance and they win things. But, there's when you're either in the studio system or doing commercials or doing whatever, I mean, sure, on a rare occasion, there's a combo, but you usually get the job either because you're an incredible director or because you're an incredible DP, but rarely because, oh, we got a director and a DP in one. How great.
Yeah.
No one cares about that when there's a
budget.
And
I don't know that anyone, I think to me, it's about figuring out what's good about our big budget productions and what do I miss or what was freeing or what was helpful about those smaller budget productions and bringing, it used to be a more of a conversation, right? It used to be you would do your weekend project and then you would, you know, do the big full scale project and you could bring, you could bring them back and forth. You could be like, well, I don't actually need this thing that we're going to spend a bunch of money on, or, oh, I'm going to do the low budget version of this thing that I learned on this commercial. And I think in just kind of just doing bigger stuff for so long, it's I feel like I said, I just want to question my assumptions of like, what do I actually need and what do I actually want?
Yeah.
I mean, though for the record, it's always a DP. Like, I don't know how we got on the idea of like DP director combo. I guess Valentina V maybe.
Yeah. She, because she's a DP director combo.
I guess that makes sense.
I mean, she also DPs and direct, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, like to me, I think the big differentiator between those two types of projects you're working with is like who's in charge. Mm-hmm. And when we're doing commercials, when you're showrunning sure. something, like, you know, maybe you're in charge when you're the showrunner, but...
But you like, still I'm have usually, a studio or in the network.
Yeah, and, I'm not yeah. in charge, so it's...
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not the one that says, okay, we got it, let's go move on. Mm-hmm. I'm the one that says, hey, I think we got it. You all ready to move on? And so, you know, Yuki, the DP that I worked with many times, I would always be like, hey, you know, let's just shoot this on iPhone. Let's shoot it on GoPro. Let's get a bunch of GoPros. Let's get Sony A7S3s and mount it here. And, you know, you see these amazing YouTube videos and you're like, let's do that. You know, let's see what Dude Perfect did mm-hmm. with this thing. Or let's see Mr. You know, Beast did this thing. And he would always say the same thing. He'd be like, look, we can do that, but you do not have a monitor. Client Video Village mm-hmm. is not going to get a monitor mm-hmm. of this GoPro feed. So after every take, we're going to have to disassemble the GoPro, mm-hmm. go show them what we got before they'll let us move on. And it's like that to him is always the thing that's like a client job versus like an mm-hmm. artistic job.
Yeah.
Like, do we need to have somebody else constantly monitoring what we're doing? And that's one of the biggest differences between like a pro camera system.
When I shot Squaresville, which was not my first web series, but like the one that broke me, rather broke my career, I didn't have a monitor the first season. I would check the frame. It was on a 5D. I'd look at the frame and then I would go and sit with the actor. I would be like,
that's like, yeah, like Hitchcock or not get, Hitchcock, but just film, get in there. Old film style. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just like, okay, got it. And then like, if I needed to review something, I would go over there and watch it on the, in like the little monitor or whatever, and then we would move on.
Yeah.
And so did we have an AC? No. Did we have like any support staff? Not really. We had a couple guys lighting, and then the DP, like literally Bobby, the DP, would pull off of the,
pull focus
off of the barrel. You know, every once in a while, maybe it was a little softer than I'd like, but like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. Wasn't bad. Anyway, Kaplan.
Yeah.
Enough about my previs.
Yeah. I had one final topic before we wrap things.
Hit me.
And it's kind of related to this, and it just kind of came up while we were recording this. But I, you know, I'm directing this thing next week, and we're talking about DPs, and I saw this commercial that I've been referencing that's like really awesome. The camera mm-hmm. movement is amazing. The color is great. The lighting's incredible. And I was like, you know what? Why don't I look up who directed this commercial? And then ask that director who the DP was, right? So I found out the name of the director. They are on a very big roster.
Say it one more time. So you were like, oh, you just Googled the director and you were like, did you get on IMDb Pro? Or like,
I went to Instagram.
you slid into their DMs is what you're saying.
I DM'd them on Instagram. And I said, hey, how are you? I'm a big fan of your work, fellow commercial director. I'm watching this specific spot of yours and I love the camera movement, colors and lighting. I was curious who was the DP on that. Is it someone you regularly work with? And then this person, this director, I mean, they're like on the same roster as Michel Gondry. They're like a A-list commercial director. They wrote me back today, finally. And they said, this job was shot by a DP based in LA, whatever. I haven't worked with him before or after that because I very rarely shoot with the same DPs, but he's very talented and sweet to work with. And I said, oh, out of curiosity, why do you rarely work with the same DPs? Do you not find that it's easier to repeat with the same DP and have a shorthand with them? And they wrote, well, in my experience, the first time you work with a DP, they put all the focus in the work and really want to please you. But then if you work again and again with them, they relax and move their focus to other things like talking, hanging out, etc. And they lose that initial tension of wanting to do a great job. But that's just my experience. Many directors work with the same DP all the time and are very mm-hmm. happy about it. Also, I do very versatile jobs and I try to book the right person for that specific jobs. Not all DPs can do very versatile work. So this is like an A-list director doing multi-million really dollar commercials, never works with the same DP.
Wow.
Isn't that kind of shocking?
It is truly shocking. Yeah, pretty wild.
Right, because you kind of think sometimes if you get one person to bring, like it's nice if it's someone the DP is someone you've worked with before, or like mm-hmm. a friend has worked with before, a friend of a friend, some frame of reference. And then this director is purposely doesn't do that. And you know, their reasoning, I'm not going to disagree with it that much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, they're not wrong. I guess there is your point about shorthand, certainly, is quite valuable. You know, it comes up, there was a, did you see, there was a meme on director content the other day that was like, you know, making a joke about your ride or die DP on all of your indie projects. And then as soon as you get your,
as soon as you get a big budgeted budget. Something, you're like, bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of people send me that one. not because me specifically. Kind of funny.
Yeah, it's really good. But, you know, there's a loyalty factor to it as well. Like the people who, you know, did your early projects. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a little Machiavellian, maybe? Is that the right way to use that term?
It's more like I want to always be adored. So I want to have like a be in the honeymoon phase every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, but is the honeymoon phase the most? That's interesting. You refer to it as the honeymoon phase because, you know, especially over the last 2 years, I've been put on a lot of like DP director blind dates where, for whatever reason, I was working with a person who I'd never worked with before. Because timing, circumstances, agency preference sometimes. And I just...
Hold on one second.
Yeah. I would just miss...
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would miss the familiarity. I would miss the ability to speak the same language. Like, you don't know their references. You don't know... You know, like on the fly, if you can be like, hey, you know that shot from Alien? And they're like, yep, you're good to go. Or
I guess that doesn't happen that often. But yeah.
I mean, it does when you know them well. Or if you can be like, hey, I want, you know, this Raising Arizona shot or whatever. Like, depending on who you're working with, you know what their reference points are. Or you know you should be calling a lens, or you know you shouldn't call a lens because they hate that, or whatever it is, you know? You learn how to get the best work out of someone rather than it just be fueled by a desire to deliver, you know? And also, like, I think we've both been in situations where, like, you know, that first time is the last time for a reason, you know?
Yeah, but I've had a lot of really great first times with the DPs.
Well, all right. Same. But I guess, isn't it better the second time or no?
Sometimes. But I mean, I think that's why like directors and DPs break up sometimes, is because they feel like, you know, the other one isn't trying as hard. It's like given, the job's a given, and they're not like fighting to get it or fighting to have it or fighting to keep it. And at that point you're like, I guess I'm the only passionate one on this job, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting because I feel like there's an echelon of DP where they're booking, you know, really consistently, and like their agent is getting them out there and their work is famous. But that's rarefied air, you know, and that for the most part, I think that the director relationship is a big part of a DP's income. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, of course.
If you got, even if it's five or six people, if they are all booking, then you've got a pretty busy year. But like, if the five or six directors that you came up with, or, you know, have been working with most frequently aren't doing so well. So I guess I'm saying like, it's kind of always incumbent on the DP if they want to like be working and you're working to kind of stay on your toes. You know, not out of like fear or something like that, but just because like work begets work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what do I know? This person is crushing
their work,
you know?
Later. And I think I'll get your take.
Go. It's a little inconsistent job to job. I'm sure it's all great if this person is listening.
Speaking of inconsistent performances, Are you ready for our very inconsistent segment, Unpaid Endorsements?
Unpaid Endorsements.
Here we go. I got two. One is a TikTok. John Waters, the Pope of Trash, my favorite filth elder, auteur and raconteur John Waters, was in town for Outfest. I think there's an exhibit at the Academy Museum honoring him right now. So I'm assuming that's why he's in town. Anyway, someone at Outfest asked him about what his advice to filmmakers is. This is the TikTok.
Go participate. Go see every movie. See the bad ones, the good ones. Watch movies with the sound off. And you can see how a movie's made. If you ever think your movie you're making is too long, it is. If you ever wonder, should I cut this? The answer is yes. And somebody has to like it beside the person you're fucking and your mother.
Thank you so much.
It's pretty good, right? It's good advice. Yeah, succinct words to live by from John Waters. And then the other one is one of my favorites, Joe Pera. I've endorsed all of his work, essentially, at this point. He's got a new special out. It's free on YouTube. So if you Google Joe Pera on YouTube, the special is out and is special. Slow and steady.
Slow and steady. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, since I have no good endorsements, I'm just going to name you all these things I watched while I was in Toronto that I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I watched all of Painkillers. Show run by Micah Fitzerman Blue, who's been on the podcast. It's about Oxycontin and the Sockler family. It's based on Empire of Pain, and the whole thing was directed by Peter Berg. I enjoyed it. And then I watched all of One Piece. Have you watched that?
I have not, though. I know an actor in it, actually.
Oh, really? I thought the cast was spectacular, and I did not recognize any of them. Who's the actor you know?
So I know Brashad Mayweather, who plays Patty on One Piece.
Well, anyway, our friend Lindsay Gelfand is a writer on it. And
oh, that's cool.
It's based on this like anime manga.
Yeah.
It just looks so silly, and like the trailer just kind of looked weird. And it's just so fun and enjoyable to watch. And the visual effects and the world building and all that stuff is amazing. Dude, watch it. It's so fun. It's so easy to just kind of put. I actually, you know, each episode ends with a cliffhanger. And I was watching it in Toronto at like 3 a.m. because I was like on West Coast time. And I was like, oh, no, cliffhanger. Can I go to sleep right now? I watched also Blackberry. It's a Canadian film, actually, about Blackberry with Jay Baruchel. Really enjoyed it. And the last movie I saw, which was also surprisingly good, was No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence. Did you see that one?
No, but our pal Tim Wilkheim said it was great.
Okay, yeah. And it has full frontal nudity from Jennifer Lawrence fighting these people on the beach. It's like a comedy scene. And I was watching it on the airplane and I was like, should I fast forward? Like, and there was like a baby and like a mom who seemed kind of conservative sitting like behind me and then, but across aisle. So she could see my screen very comfortably. And I'm just like, you know, I'm just waiting for that scene to end. And I was like, I want to watch a scene cause it's funny, but also like, I feel uncomfortable. Anyhow, that scene aside, which made me uncomfortable just being watching it on an airplane. I just thought the character, it's kind of like screenwriting 101, you know, like the characters want different things, like the opposite things, but they're kind of, you know, just kind of driven that they have the same answer. They're kind of symbiotic and there's the secrets and I don't know, but every scene was just so funny and she's so good. And the main guy in it, I don't know his name, but he's just like so good. He plays this like dweeb, like 18-year-old kid. And I like, if you want a fun, easy movie to like, no hard feelings, you can't go wrong.
Awesome. Yeah, I will check it out. Oren, I'm proud of you. That's a lot of good sounding content.
Well, because I was, you know, away from my family. I also started watching After Party, which I think you recommended. Did you not?
Oh, I don't know. Somebody
else
did.
It. Yeah, very similar to like Glass Onion and Knives Out. And the last thing I did watch, which you recommended, which I also loved, was Renfield.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, just totally. Actually,
yeah, you loved Renfield for sure. Yeah,
because it's kind of like One Piece wackiness, but with kind of the like darkness of like what we do in the shadows, you know. I don't know. It's so good. But the visual effects were, I thought, pretty incredible. Anyhow, if you want to tell us anything about what we said, have us any questions, want to get a refund for your Patreon, email us, just shoot it pod at gmail.com. If you want to follow us, we're at Just Shoot a Pod on all social media. I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow across all social media, especially Letterboxd. I see you Letterboxd fam people.
Fan with a no.
No, with an M. With an M.
Okay, fan.
Like people, some people are following me on Letterboxd. I appreciate it. I apologize. It's a lot of kids' movies right now, but getting back into it. Get my life back. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. And you're listening to music provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.